Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division. And we have a pared-down agenda today because a bill that we had anticipated would take quite a while is now going to be on the agenda Tuesday, and that is Representative Richardson's bill related to scooters. And she will have a DE amendment to that bill, and we're hoping to have that posted later today or tomorrow at the latest. So all members of the committee and the public will have a chance to digest that with a few over the weekend and early next week. So hopefully we'll have enough opportunity for a good discussion. So that bill will not be heard today. It was originally on the agenda. And again, our expectations that will be Tuesday, again, with the bill posted later today, tonight, tomorrow, at the very, very latest. So with that, our agenda just has a couple of bills which we'll get to momentarily, but first I'd like to ask Representative Petersburg if he wishes to move the minutes for March 10th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do indeed move the minutes of March 10th as presented to us.
Okay. The motion is to approve the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Our first bill on the agenda is Representative Bernardi's House File 4097. We will take the bill. There's an author's amendment, and then we have four additional amendments that we'll have after our public discussion. So Representative Bernardi, we have House File 4097 before us, and do you have a motion?
Yes, I would like to move House File 4097 to Ways and Means.
Okay. The motion is to move House File 4097 to Ways and Means. To the bill, Representative Bernardi, and do you want us to consider your amendment first or later on in the process?
We can do it right now to get it taken care of.
Okay.
It is the, I have two different ones, and this is House
A5, I believe.
A5 amendment. And this one covers the cost of the $24,000 expense, upfront expense, to in the general fund.
And yes. So members, this is a general fund appropriation. And it's really to get the bill in the shape that the author would like us to consider it in. Is there a discussion? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I think there was another amendment that was similar. Is that one just not going to be offered?
No, that's not going to be offered.
All right, thank you.
The A5 is what we're considering. The difference is a general fund appropriation versus from a special revenue fund.
Thank you.
Okay. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. We have the bill as amended now before us. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Driver's license road test delays have received a lot of attention over the past year as Minnesotans grew frustrated with having to wait months for a testing slot, wait hours in line before exam stations open in hopes of securing a walk-in spot, or drive sometimes many, many miles to another testing location with availability. Thankfully, some steps have already been taken to address the problem. The Department of Public Safety formed an exam efficiencies task force in October of 2019 and has made a number of changes to help address the problem, including ending the use of standing appointments for driving schools and adding weekend test appointments at some metro locations. They also received funds in 2019 for a new exam station and 11 additional staff positions. However, challenges remain. In a report this past January, the agency has identified three key areas of focus in that regard: staffing, no-show rates, and exam fail rates. While the funding for a new exam station and 11 staff position is an important step, and DVS continues to study how to ensure their staffing can adequately meet customer needs, less attention has been given to address the no-show and exam fail rates. Data from the department indicates that statewide, Nearly 40% of applicants fail their road exam, including nearly 30% of applicants between the ages of 15 and 17. For applicants over the age of 18, that rate rises to nearly 50%. In 2019, the statewide no-show rate for road exams was 16.8%. The result is people having to use multiple exam slots or time slots that may go completely unused, even if there is demand for them. This bill seeks to help address these underlying issues in three key ways. One, implementing a $20 no-show fee for exams not canceled 24 hours in advance. Codifying the prohibition on providing standing appointments for Class D road test. And thirdly, requiring the agency to conduct an evaluation to identify the key factors that are contributing to these issues, potential causes of those factors, and changes that would address them. The $20 no-show fee is in line with the current fee charged for a third road exam after an individual fails the first two. I was glad to see that DVS has ended their practice of providing standing appointments to driving schools for Class D licenses. My bill would put a prohibition on that practice into statute, so that would not be allowed again in the future. The required evaluation would look at a number of aspects of the driver's license exam process to help identify how to best fix things moving forward. It would, at a minimum, include an overview of the administrative process, summarize issues relating to scheduling and administering tests in a timely manner, and identifying and analyzing primary factors that impact the road test success rates, with the hopes that we can address those and limit the number of Minnesotans who need to take multiple tests. Factors impacting road test success that would be examined must include contributing sources and causes, barriers to effective preparation, and disparities across the areas of driver education status, exam locations, and demographic populations, and driver training schools. It would also evaluate the number of geographic locations of our road exams, evaluate methods to reduce no-show rates, and identify and evaluate methods to reduce failure rates, including education requirements for applicants over the age of 18, incentives for increased pre-test preparation, and modifications to driver education curriculum or pre-test requirements. Lastly, the evaluation would look at the administrative aspect of testing, reviewing the actions of the agency has already done and planned, proposing an optimal configuration for administration of the process, and estimating what operational and fiscal resources would be needed for the proposed changes. This would include making recommendations for any legislative changes that may be needed. DPS must provide the report to the legislature by February 1st, 2021. It is my hope that by having the information at the beginning of the budget year, next session, will put us in a good position to continue to make improvements to the system. Implementing no-show fees, continuing the prohibition of standing appointments, and a rigorous evaluation about what exactly is contributing to the problem should help ease the stress on the current system and help us to develop a more efficient and resilient process that best serves the needs of Minnesotans.
Thank you very much for that explanation and the details about the bill. Members, do you have any testifiers San Bernardino. I believe Ms. Corey is here and Mr. Benner. Would you like?
Sure, you bring whoever would like to testify. That would be okay. A great opportunity to do that.
I do have two on the list, Ms. Corey and Mr. Benner. Oh, and then members, this is a new policy for the Transportation Committee and test whereas if normally the page will pass around a clipboard, but now we're asking testifiers to sign it in the back out of an abundance of caution. So please do that as you leave. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Corey.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. My name is Emma Corey, and I am the Director for Driver and Vehicle Services at the Department of Public Safety. First, I want to thank Representative Bernardi for bringing this thoughtful bill forward. We have been working hard in DVS to better understand the pressures that our exam stations are seeing and finding ways to address the concerns of Minnesotans as they try to get their tests. Since the fall of 2019, we've been able to use FAST technology, the new system that we are putting in place behind MinLARS for both the driver's side and the vehicle side to make improvements with scheduling appointments and increased efficiencies. If you pass your test, your future appointments are then canceled. We've got this automatic online appointment system now so that you can go in, make a new appointment, and then if you forget to cancel it, we'll cancel it for you. And so it is a much more efficient way. In the past, Minnesotans could only get an appointment in the next month. Now we can schedule all the way out 6 months, and we're open to doing it even further out. In addition, we continue to work through our Exam Efficiencies Task Force as well, and MMB, the Management and Analysis Division. That was the same group that you referenced that played an important role in helping us research and come to a decision against standing appointments. I believe that was the right decision for us, and we made that, and it is effective now. As of January 1st of this year, we do not have any more standing appointments for Class D tests. Addressing no-shows, as is in this bill, is a very, very important component of this bill. We currently see an average rate. If you look at the greater Minnesota as well as the metro area, we are looking at a 20%. You talked about the 16 average, generally up to a 20% of no-shows. That is 25,000 appointments that go as no-shows. That is an immense pressure on our system. We have only 3 locations out of our 93 locations that accept walk-ins. So in our walk-in locations, yes, perhaps we can fill behind a late, a no-show or someone that doesn't turn up. But in 90 other locations, we are losing resources that are already very, very strained because someone did not show up. We hope that a cancellation fee will encourage more people to take their appointments seriously and free those spaces up for those looking for an appointment. I want you to know that our team is thinking with head and heart. If a person is feeling like, in the days leading up to the appointment, I'm not quite ready for this test yet, we want you to go ahead and cancel. We want you to go ahead and cancel because our intent is for you to help us to help you. We want you to show up for your appointments. We want you to come and feel prepared and confident for those appointments. And most importantly, we want you to pass those appointments in your first, second, maybe maximum third time. Right now, we are seeing Minnesotans that are taking up to 6, sometimes 8 tests to be able to pass. Very often, perhaps, maybe even using a test as an opportunity to get some practice. I get some of those things, but the point is This report as well will allow us to do some really good, thoughtful research analysis, look at our numbers, come up with some recommendations. I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Corey, and I know we have probably several questions of you from committee members, and I'm going to start with Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm curious, the reporting structure within the agency, who do the managers, I assume they're managerial level individuals who are head of each of the testing stations, is that correct? And who do they report to?
Yes.
In the agency?
Ms. Corey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Runbeck, thank you for your passion and your support and your concern behind Minnesotans, and I've been hoping to connect with you as well. To respond to your question, all of our exam stations are organized into 10 regions, and each of the 10 regions then reports up to our exam program manager, and the program manager, so each of our exam stations has a regional supervisor and assistant regional supervisor. They report up to a program manager for exam, and then the program manager for exam reports up to our driver services director, who's in the room with me, Andrea Fassbender. And Andrea then is my direct report as my program director for driver services. Under driver services would be other things like issuance of real IDs as well as fines and things like that.
Representative Runbeck, do you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, I do. So there's just one other clarification then. How many test stations are there?
There are 93.
93. Okay.
That would include all of our satellite stations.
Right.
Representative Runbeck.
Just a comment, if I might. So four layers up, I guess. I mean, what we're seeing today is a bill that's proposing to study the problem. I mean, we've known of the problem since 2014, at least. There was money budgeted in the supplemental budget to do some hiring, you know, of examiners. And so it's been a 5-6 year problem. These are people on the ground, the station managers. Are you not able to talk to them? Are they not able to just sort of huddle and tell folks what the problem is? I mean, to have to study it at this stage seems very peculiar to me.
Ms. Corey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Runbeck, absolutely. The Exam Efficiencies Task Force is a grassroots. This is my examiners. This is my regional supervisors. This is my counter staff voice that is informing some of the things that have been put in place in the last 6 months. So for us to intuitively have known that the fact that automatic cancellation will help the problem immensely, or a signage that tells folks about our last appointment, or what we have been implementing for the past 6 months that I have had an opportunity to share with Representative Benardi outlines practical suggestions from the front line of our exam stations. So we have already implemented, there is a list here, and I'm happy to share it more publicly as well, but there is a list of implementation, things that we have implemented since fall of last year. And what I think the report will do and the study will do is we are going into now phase two. Phase one, we work Saturdays and Sundays. We added 3,300 appointments over November and December. We are now going into phase two, that is April 19th to August 29th. During that time, that will be our peak summertime. Our intent is to try to minimize overtime and try to do this with a new established schedule for our examiners, which will go Tuesday to Saturday, and add Saturday as a working day in our exam stations. So we are working on several ideas that are coming to us from the front line. We're working with AFSCME. Our work with our AFSCME union has been very, very encouraging for me as the new DVS director. So I want to assure you that the ideas that are being implemented, that will inform this report, that will be implemented in phase two and beyond, are ideas that are clearly being provided by the front line. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Representative Petersburg, and then we'll have Representative Kosnick and Representative Hausman.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Department, for coming down and talking about it. It's a large project and a large problem, I should say. And one of the things that disturbs me just a little bit is it sounds like, well, this just occurred in the last 6 months, and so now we're just fixing it now in the last 6 months. But we've been hearing about this for quite a few years, and so I'm concerned that it took the department that long to start realizing maybe we should do something. It seemed like only when the legislature started pushing it that you did, because obviously you're talking to your front lines, as you said. We have the customer, too, that we've been listening to, and I'm sure you've heard that, too. And some of the things that are in Representative Bernardi's bill here seems like common sense that all organizations, whether it's public or private, ought to be doing on a fairly regular basis. Why did it take so long for us to get involved with that?
Ms. Puri.
Representative Petersburg, Chair and members, what I want to say is I cannot speak to anything before September of last year. September of last year is when I came on board. I can speak to specific changes that have been made since September, and I am committed to Minnesotans first and to you as a legislative body that as we go forward, practical ideas, common sense ideas, yes, we work within a strained and constrained resources. We continue to be very constrained in our resources in terms of the demand for services, but I assure you as we go forward, we will be employing all those to serve Minnesotans to our best ability within our resources.
A follow-up, Representative Peter.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do applaud you for the changes I made. And I didn't mean to downplay those. I'm just inquiring as to where we got. Just quick follow-up question. We do have three stations that do allow walk-ins. Two questions. Where are those? And is it a real hardship to allow for walk-ins in the other stations as well?
So, thank you, Chair and members and Representative Petersburg. The three that do allow walk-ins are Eagan, Plymouth, and Arden Hills. Those are our larger closed facilities, opportunity for us to be able to have a long line that might need to wait in the event that we can fit them in. So those are our three right now. That the others are often in the last 6 months I have visited across the state all of our regions at least one time, what I'm finding is it can be anywhere from a storefront in a strip mall to a little bit more open space, but certainly not the space afforded to us at Eagan, like in Eagan, Plymouth, and Arden Hills.
Great. Thank you, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Representative Bernardi, I appreciate you bringing this topic forward. I obviously have a bill, so it affords us the opportunity to have a good discussion on that.
Well, let me just say, Representative Kosnick, I want to express my appreciation to you. You had raised some of these questions in Winona when we had our session down there, especially some of the topics in Section 2. So I wanted to, express my appreciation for that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I think, through the discussion that will entail today, I think we'll have some suggestions and some of the discussions that were happening in the other chamber that I watched the hearing on. I was encouraged by some of the comments by you, Director. So I have a couple questions here, but I don't want to, the efficiency task force I wasn't aware of. I don't know if there was a report that came out of that, if that's something that you can share with the committee members as we try to dive into this a little bit more. I think that would be helpful to know what the task force did, because unfortunately, Representative Bernardi, I think your bill studies a problem that we already is well documented and we know exists. And so I think I'd like to see a little bit more action to move forward and actually solve the problem of having parents to get up at 3 in the morning and wait 8 hours to possibly get one of these walk-in times. So if you've got a report that you could share with the committee, that would be great. A quick question would be, how many of the 93 centers are located in the 7-county metro? And I'll just go through the questions,
yeah,
and then maybe you can go
absolutely.
Back. I think there's only about 10, so if you could correct me, that would be great. I'm curious how the previously held spots or times that were given to certain driving schools for unapparent reasons. I could have some speculation, but Director Corey, how has relieving those or releasing those times to the general scheduling, how has that helped improve scheduling times, if any at all? And then if you could comment, most importantly, is we do have third-party testing for school bus operations, and we also instituted that for commercial driving tests. If you could share with the committee how those tests are going, and because I think that's really one of the solutions is to have third-party testing in part of available to the public so that we can alleviate the pressure and the backlog and the frustrations that moms and dads are having to take off work would feel. So if you can comment on third-party testing there. And then Director Corey, or maybe the research, what does the current statutes say about how long are we supposed to schedule a test for the consumers? I believe it's in statute. If you could refresh the committee what those turn times are should be. Thank you.
Ms. Corey, so you got the questions?
Yes. Mr. Chair.
I've got them written down if you need
to
go back.
I there's about four, and I'm tracking it too. Right.
Okay.
And they're all good ones.
Yes, absolutely, members and Representative Kosnick, thank you for your questions. Firstly, on the report, so we do have an internal DVS report from us. So our exam efficiencies task force was created right in the fall of last year. And so they have pulled together a report that has talked about the efforts, and that was updated at the end of January. So that is something that we can certainly share, have to share that with Representative Bernardi. On the number of metro locations, I think I am counting 12. There are 12. The three regions, Region 1, Region 2, and Region 3, are the three in the metro, greater Minnesota metro area, and that we've got 12 locations there in the metro area. On scheduling times, so I'm not sure if I clearly understood the question, but I thought the question was how does the ending the cancellation, improving our process for cancellations improve the overall? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Just,
yes.
If I could just clarify the question. Previously, there was a practice of having held testing times reserved for only certain driving schools.
Mm-hmm.
The department on its own, after we called it out, decided to end that practice. The question is having those time slots sent back to the general scheduling, how has that made much of a difference to improve
absolutely
scheduling?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we ended the standing appointments, that was available to about 23 driving schools. And 23 driving schools among 10 pages of driving schools. So firstly, the equity, the inequity of that practice needed to stop. And it was a practice that was not necessarily started in an inequitable way. It was probably more for convenience, and you're always at our doors with three students. Well, let's just put you into the schedule 20 years, 25 years ago. And so the practice needed to stop because of the inequity, because several schools now are, over 400 schools are part of that driving school process now. With ending those appointments, what it has done is it has opened it up to the general public, to folks that may not perhaps be able to pay the $300 for the testing, for the training with the driving school, and then coming in for their test. And so I know that upwards to 1,000-plus tests have been added on a I should not put that number out because I don't know the exact number, but what I do know is that ending standing appointments for 23 schools put out a major number of spots for other applicants that were not necessarily able to pay for driving school appointments. Third party testing. You talk about third party testing. Yes, we do have CDL third party testing. I know that we have about 67. I'm looking at my. I'm still new to this. I'm still learning the business. I think about 67. We have about 67 third party testers for CDL. I do know that we have also had some schools, community colleges, but that has dwindled down because it has not been of great, I'm not sure whether the economics, but I think we're down to just two schools, community schools that offer third party testing. But there are about 67 third-party testers. Let me explain the difference, and I've been wrapping my head around it in this session. Third-party testers for UPS, for Pepsi, for Metro Transit makes a lot of sense. They have a vested interest in their drivers being the safest drivers out there. Third-party testers for CDL drivers makes a lot of sense. It is also regulated by the feds. We do not confuse training and testing. You cannot test someone that you have trained. It is clear in federal regulations. Pepsi is not going to pass one of their drivers if they think that that driver is not a safe driver. We are talking in the context of Class D to have driving schools that charge candidates to pay for driver education to also sign off that you have passed the driving test. I believe that to be a conflict of interest. I think there was another question on 14 days. Okay, so the question I think, Mr. Representative Kosnick, was what is it in statute in terms of our, what are we required? What is the department required? What is my division required to provide for Minnesotans? I believe there is a statute that says a Minnesotan that wants to be able to test should be able to test within a period of 14 days. That is our goal. That is what we are aiming towards, to be able to provide a Minnesotan with an opportunity to get a test in their region, in a neighboring region, in 14 days. I know that it's going to be hard. It's going to take resources to get there. We are still working on our scheduling so that if there is a test that's open in the next 14 days, that there is a series of tests that are open. We're looking at some concerns even internally about our measures and our metrics and how we are measuring next available appointment. I don't want for the public to hear that you can get an appointment in 14 days, but that is two appointments, and then the next appointment is in July. What I am hearing, I am responding to. I'm asking the tough questions of my staff, of my team, and saying if we say we are open 14 days out, how many appointments? And so we're going to change something on our dashboard very soon as well that says appointments are open transparently. This is when we open up appointments, on the 1st, on the 15th. I think I'm probably talking more than I need to, but hopefully it's answering the question, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Director. I appreciate your answers and your comments, I guess, and we'll dive into them a little further, but I think the last one is the most important. Mm-hmm. Your department, and I'm sorry if it's kind of new, you're newer there, but nonetheless, this has been going on for a couple years ago. as Representative Rumbeck said, the legislature appropriated like $800,000 to get new staff. And so we've already charged your department to and set a standard that you need to meet. And the department has consistently failed over the years, even with more dollars thrown at the problem. And so we're going to offer solutions to alleviate the public's frustration. I appreciate some of the stuff that's been done in your comments today. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the standard, and that's really the crux of the problem, Representative Bernardi, is that we're not meeting the standard that the previous legislatures have set to have a test. It's not too much to ask of a basic government service to be able to schedule a test within 14 days. And I think some of the questions that I asked are indicative of what the problem is and where the fix is. So thank you for your comments, and we'll proceed.
Thank you very much, Representative Kosnick. Representative Hausman, you're next on the list.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to pass so that we can get on with the
okay.
I'll talk to her later.
Okay. Are there any other questions of Ms. Corey from members? Okay. Thank you very much. We have one more testifier on the list, and maybe others that I'll call for. But the one on the list is Mr. Pat Benner. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Benner. Please state your name for the record.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Pat Benner, and I'm a legislative representative for AFSCME Council 5. I'm here today to express our support for House File 4097. Our members know the frustrations of the backlog of driver's exams firsthand, and we know that action must be taken to get any serious progress on this issue. First, we appreciate the inclusion of the $20 fee for failing to report for a scheduled road exam without canceling it 24 hours before. Though we do have concerns over how this might impact Minnesotans over the long term, and it could be felt disproportionately by working class people, it is an immediate step that should improve the percentage of people who actually take their scheduled road tests. We support the scope of the report that the commissioner and the director is required to produce. These issue areas, particularly regarding barriers to preparation before the exam and success rate, are of great interest to our members at DVS. We hope that if this bill becomes law, the commissioner will reach out to the frontline staff for their input and ideas. I can say that after my conversations with some of these staff, that their knowledge of the problems surrounding road tests and their ideas to improve the services they provide will make a real difference in success rate. Finally, just to touch on some of the proposed amendments to House File 4097, we would like to express our opposition to any shift towards third-party testers in the space. Third-party testers will increase the cost to consumers and lower the quality and validity of the road test exams. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, for bringing this bill forward, and we encourage you all to support House File 4097. I'm happy to take any questions of the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Benner. Are there questions of Mr. Benner?
Yes.
Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Benner, we just heard, and I hadn't thought of that question, but we have only 12 testing stations in the state that are in the metro. Across the 93 testing stations, 12 are in the metro. That's 13% of the capacity, perhaps. I don't know. 50% of the population is here. Something is really strange. I mean, do you have any sense of why that is? And I mean, that seems like an immediate need and an immediate fix needs to happen.
Mr. Benner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so perhaps the department might want to answer this as well, but I would say that some of the testing stations that are in greater Minnesota are only open a couple days a week. And it's my understanding that the metro areas, more of them are open for longer periods of time. And as Director Corey mentioned in her testimony, they have been open on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. And they are moving towards phase two, which will keep the metro area ones open permanently on Saturdays and Sundays in hopes of alleviating the pressure.
Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Benner. I mean, it's such a distorted, site map. So there's something, you know, long in the history, I guess, that got them set where they are. We're not changing that because we can't. I don't know. But anyway, just to call that to your attention, it seems like that's got to change.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Brenner, I think I heard the previous testifier talk about some of those stations outstate are only open 2 or 3 days a week. I think if we're trying to compare the inequity of it, we should probably look at the slots that are there in the metro area compared to the slots that are on the outstate if we're going to try and so we're comparing apples to apples, because if a station's only open 2 days a week, where the ones here are open 5 days a week, there's a lot more slots in the metro area, even if there's only 12 or 13 stations.
Good point. I don't know, Representative Runbeck, should we ask Ms. Corey? I want to make sure that your question was answered thoroughly about the metro. Okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, you know, there's a lot of data that we just...
Okay.
As a committee, we really don't have, you know, how many tests do they do a year? I mean, yeah. A lot of things. It would be great to know.
I think that's a fair question, and I hope the department can provide us with the data that was mentioned here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, okay. Are there any other questions for Ms. Benner, Mr. Benner? Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify in favor and opposition to House File 4097 or the amendments that have been posted and pre-filed? Okay, well, with that, let's get to the amendments. We have an order for those. The first one is A1, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 is pretty simple. It seems like it would be, if we're not trying to fix the whole ball of wax at this point, then this would be very doable, it seems to me, and should happen. Just that we must ensure adequate staffing, and that retakes of a test would occur at least within 30 days. I mean, people are still calling me and saying, my daughter failed, and this was in November, and here she finds out she can't get another test till May, June, something like that. So it's still very current, the backlog problem. So I would hope we could take a look at that. And I appreciate Ms. Corey's explanations and her position of being very new to the department and, you know, learning a lot of this in a hurry. So I appreciate that. We were never introduced. Those of us who were inquiring about the problem were never told that there was new head of the department. We weren't introduced. I mean, I think there's just like a kind of a blackout in terms of information transfer. So anyway, it's we got to make the progress. This bill appears to study things that we already know or should know. If it's a well-managed department, if it's a well-managed agency, this should be readily available. New information gets put together and, you know, on a monthly basis. But my amendment is very minimal, and I would encourage your support.
Before we have response from Representative Bernardi, I know that Representative Kosnick, I think, wanted to make a point as well. Please.
Oh, okay. You want me to go ahead?
Well, maybe.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would, committee members, just speak in favor of this amendment. As we mentioned, the current statute states that the department shall be providing a road test within 14 days. That's current statute. What this amendment does, and it's a copy of a bill that we introduced, is just simply say that Director Corey and Department of Vehicle Services, you have to figure out a way to do this. You really don't have, in practical manner, you know, I don't know if this is going to become law, but in practical manner, you've got the public out there that's sleeping in your parking lots at 3 in the morning, maybe getting there at, I think there were some cases, getting there at 10 o'clock at night. The dad would get there at 10 o'clock at night, sleep in his car overnight. Think about that. And then at 8 in the morning, the mom comes with the daughter, I think it was, switch cars with the dad so that the dad was in line to maybe get a spot. And that's not acceptable. And so all of this amendment does, members, is directs the department to do what's already in statute. So instead of, there's just a little stronger language. And, you know, I know that it comes with a fiscal cost, and we can talk about that. But the bottom line is people are demanding a basic government service. We're offering solutions, and the department needs to adequately figure out how to meet that demand.
Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, can we get a roll call on that, please?
Roll call is requested on the A1. Representative Bernardi.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I oppose this amendment. I believe this is language from Representative Kosnick's bill, and his bill cost $11 million in fiscal year 2021 and $20 million in the following biennium. And it's very expensive. We don't have those funds right now, and that is not something that, and it doesn't address the high failure rate as well as the no-shows. So I am opposed to this amendment.
Is there any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Just to the last comments, Representative Bernardi, this doesn't change the rest of your bill. That does include all of those things that you talked about, no shows, et cetera. So this does is it tries to reinforce the fact that we should probably follow statute, and that there's been no provisions for retakes, and this just kind of solves and solidifies that. And I don't think that's harmful to anybody to just say, hey, we expect that we're going to follow the statutes and follow the directives. So I would ask for support.
Any further discussion? Roll call has been requested on the A1, and Mr. Dodge will call the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
No.
Vice Chair Tabke?
No.
Representative Torkelson? Representative Bernardi?
No.
Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Hausman?
No.
Representative Heinrich?
Yes.
Representative Cagle?
No.
Representative Kosnick?
Yes.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Nelson? Representative O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Representative Petersburg?
Yes.
Representative Richardson?
No.
Representative Runbeck?
Yes.
Representative West?
Yes.
Representative Walgamott?
No.
Representative Joachim?
No.
There being 6 ayes and 10 nays, the motion to pass the A1 amendment fails. The next amendment on our list is the 4097DE1 amendment. I believe that's Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would move the H4097DE1 amendment. Members, what this amendment does is introduces a third-party testing. We had a testifier from the union testify against it. I think it's more important to answer to our constituents and provide the basic level of service that they expect, allow more entities to be third-party testing to be. The department will still set what the standards are, the same standards that they have for their direct employees at their centers. This would allow people that are interested in becoming an examiner to create their own business, or if they're a current driving school, which is most likely, that they would be able to provide the test and provide that service to their communities throughout the state. And additionally, one of the things that we've talked about is the drivers that are over 18 years old and seem to be repeatedly failing multiple times. If you're over 18 years old, you are not required to have any training behind the wheel with a licensed instructor, and neither are you required to have a certain amount of hours behind the wheel with a licensed driver when you drive with your permit. So this introduces a little bit of a new language. It's a solution, Representative Bernardi, to your problem. We know what the problem is. I don't think we need to study it. What we want to do with 18-year-olds, give them the ability to still go pass the written test, go take the test. If they've been trained at home and have adequate experience, they'll pass the test on the first time. But to alleviate the backlog, we're going to suggest that before they go, if they fail their first test, they go back, get some practical experience driving with another licensed driver, similar to 16 and 17-year-olds. And so they'll have a driving log that was implemented after I got my driver's license, but apparently it seems to be working. So it'll give drivers practical experience, but then also it will have them have 3 hours of behind the wheel to have technical experience. And so I think this bill or amendment will give people safer. They'll be prepared to ride the roads. It'll make it safer for all the driving public, and it'll also alleviate the backlog of exams, testing times. So I hope it's not a partisan thing, but I think having the 13-year-old language in here is something that should be tried, and I hope members support it.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It doesn't say in here how much you're going to be charged for a test. And what I'm finding in my community, which is I would say on the lower end of the income scale, the people that live in my community, that there's an equity issue here. The reason why a lot of my constituents are not taking the test until they're 18, because they can't afford to take the driving school. When I went to school in high school, we had it as part of our curriculum in school. The schools put the driver test on, but a lot of the schools have stopped doing that because, number one, it costs them more money to do this, and the insurance piece of it just was outrageous, so they couldn't afford to do it anymore. And so my three sons got dumped into having to pay for a private driving school. I could afford that, but a lot of my neighbors cannot. And to do this and force people to have to do this through that, and like I said, and that's the reason why they're waiting till 18 is because they can't afford to do this when they're under 18, and they're possibly driving it with their permit, with their parents to get the practice, but they're not getting the schooling because they can't afford it. I think this just is going to make it, again, it's an equity issue to me, that it's just going to make it more difficult for people that can't afford it to get their driver's licenses, and I would oppose this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to build on what Representative Nelson was talking about in terms of the current research. Back in the 80s, 97% of folks were able to get driver's education through their high school. Today, it's only 15%. And so from that perspective of the equity piece, what we're seeing from the AAA research as well is the kids who are getting their license by age 18 is highly correlated with their socioeconomic status and their income. And so just wanted to be able to say exactly what those research data are for the committee to consider.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe the question to the amendment author, could you explain the reason why you put an identification statute in here in subdivision 11, relieving the third party from being sued, the third party testers?
Mr. Chair, again,
Representative Kosnick.
If Representative Joachim, if you'd repeat the question a little closer to the microphone and point, I couldn't follow.
Sorry, your subdivision 11 on page 5, lines 5.22 to 5.28, you have an indemnification clause in here. Holding harmless any third-party testers if there's injuries or damages. Could you explain why you put that in there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Joachim, that's simply for third-party testing, damage to their vehicles, or any action that would happen in the course of driving lessons or exam.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Joachim.
Maybe we could have nonpartisan staff explain it to me, because this looks like they wouldn't be able to be sued if they caused an injury.
And we will. I just wanted to make sure this language is actually on page 4.
Sorry, page 5.
Lines 27 through 32, I believe. So I think then that would be a question for Mr. Burris.
Oh, I thought we were in A3, sorry, DE.
But it is the same language.
Okay.
So. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, I'm sorry, could you sort of restate what it is you're asking?
Thank you, Mr. Burris, and I'm sorry I came in late and jumped into this, but so then on the DE, it would be lines 4.27 to 4.33. Could you maybe explain the indemnification clause? Because I'm not a lawyer and I might be reading it wrong, but it seems like you're relieving third-party testers from being held held to account for any damages that might happen, maybe even to the in an accident with the driver or if someone's injured because a third-party tester did not do their job.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, I think you've kind of captured the essence of it. It's that the person taking the test would not be able to, well, they could still bring a suit, but this language would protect both the state and the third-party tester and the third-party testing company from suits around injury and damages that might have occurred in the course of the third-party testing process.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up then. Thank you. So you're basically telling me if a third-party tester doesn't do a job right and tell a student to stop at a stop sign and they get hit and the student's injured, then the family cannot sue for recovering for damages.
I believe so. You're asking Mr. Burris that question? Okay, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, so we're about at the limits of how far I could get into on the details
I'm
of
this. Sorry, this is a judiciary question.
Yeah. But just to kind of give you, you know, kind of high-level concept of, you know, this provision would be what, you know, if a suit could be brought, and so, you know, it would still be a matter for the courts to look at in a civil action. And the courts would look at this language as, you know, one piece of, you know, the strength of a case or whether a case could move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's just very concerning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burris and Representative Joachim. Representative Koznick.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to add, I was looking at the language, and essentially it's just the actual driver, student driver, is in control of the vehicle, and probably not their vehicle, so that's why it was in here, I believe, and I don't have a problem making it consistent to either third-party testing or whatever the liability and such is with a state-run examiners. So that's what the intent is simply to, you know, I don't have a problem making it conform or anything, but somebody else is in charge of the vehicle, and if it, that's just protection in there, I guess.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Burris, isn't there an indemnification for public examiners as well that's controlled by the state? Isn't there a type of limitation at least on that as well?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes, there are some general provisions for public employees in the, you know, kind of performance of their duties.
Of course. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any further discussion to the DE1 amendment? And Representative Bernardi, do you have any comments or suggestions for the committee?
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do oppose this amendment. There is a conflict of interest involved in this, as well as increased cost to the test taker, and I oppose this amendment. I encourage members to vote no.
Okay. The H4097DE1 amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. We are now on the A3 amendment, and that, I believe, also will be forwarded by Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This amendment is similar. It tailors it a little bit. We talked a little bit about our initial bill to provide adequate staffing that's already in statute. I don't necessarily agree with the fiscal note that, you know, if it was a private business that we'd be running, I think we'd run it a little bit leaner than what the fiscal analyst thinks is necessary. But so to pare that down, And members, we're throwing out ideas as well. So, I mean, do you know, we're trying to solve what is an important, significant frustration to the public. So we're willing to work with you. I met with you in advance. And so what this bill does is does a third-party testing, has the language to reduce the scheduling times with retakes for 18-year-olds, provide them more technical skills and practical behind-the-wheel experience. I think that would make for a better driver than someone that takes it 6, 7, 8 times and finally passes. I don't think the goal should be to necessarily have somebody keep taking it until they finally pass it. We want good, safe drivers on the road. So what this bill would also do is let's try it if it works on a 36-month pilot test. We identified that there's a lack of examining stations in the metro area with half the population. I think there's probably, even if you dig into the data, there's more need for tests for younger drivers in the metro area. But certainly there's a deficiency and a discrepancy in how many stations there are in the metro. And it's easier to implement perhaps in just the metro. So it's a 3-year pilot. 36 months, 7-county metro area, third-party examiners, still meeting the requirements that the department sets out. And then there's a report that they can, will come back to the legislature and say, did this attempt to solve the problem? What were the issues? How can we make it better? And I think that's what our constituents want us to do, is to come here and try to solve some of these problems that they face in their daily life. It still, I believe, has, I guess that maybe, I have a note here, it still has your $20 cancellation fee, Representative Bernardi, that generates revenue to help pay for it. I'm not opposed to that. I think people would rather, there's a cost to a family when, I have a co-worker of my wife, lives down in Zimbrota, had to try to schedule a time for her daughter that's very busy in school, cheerleading, and also dance. She had to take a half day off of work to go pick up, she works sales in the metro area, then drive back down to Zimbrota, get her daughter, take her to another testing site that wasn't within the next county. She had to come up in the North Metro somewhere. Take her there, try to get a test done, and then there's a cost to having to wait and for parents to do that as well. And so I think, I hope you take that into consideration. We're not trying to be unjust to anybody, but I think this is a good solution, Representative Bernardi, and I hope that you would be willing to accept it and try something, and we can tweak the language as we go through. They'll have other committee stops, and so I'll stand for any questions, but I hope the committee is interested in trying to find some solutions to alleviate this problem for our public.
Is there further discussion to the A3 amendment from committee members or questions of the author of the amendment or the bill? Okay, Representative Bernardi, do you have a recommendation to the committee?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I oppose this amendment and encourage members to vote no. This is actually an increase to test takers. The cost will go up for test takers. There's a conflict of interest. And when somebody has to get driver's training, 3 hours of driver training after failing their first test, what that means is oftentimes it's like $50 an hour, and because the A3 amendment includes that provision, correct? Having to take 3 hours of driver's exam, which could cost someone $150. I know when I took my driver's license test, I borrowed a family's car who had an automatic, because we only had stick shifts in my family. That's what we could afford. And so I took the test and I failed it. I was trying to park perfectly in my parallel parking and I hit a flag. I should have just quit while I had. I was ahead. So that's something I've always told my children, quit while you're ahead, from what I learned on my driver's test. Then I just took it with our own family stick wheel, or what do you call that, stick shift, and I passed. But it would have, if I would have been over 18 years old, it would have cost me about $150 just to go retake that test. So this increased cost for test takers, and so please vote no.
Representative Koznick.
Committee and Mr. Chair, I'd just like to clarify this version of this amendment, and I am sensitive to the department's comments about a conflict of interest. If you've given the behind the wheel test, that you maybe should have somebody else provide that. I believe that's in line 4.10 and 4.9. A third party test must not tester must not conduct a behind the wheel examination of a person whom the tester knows personally or who has not completed all driver's licensing requirements. But we can certainly add that language. And so what I'm hearing is excuses of why we don't want to solve the problem. We're offering solutions, and I think, you know, there's multiple stops. So studying the issue isn't going to alleviate the problem to that mom that has to take off work to go pick up her kid or the dad that has to sleep out in the parking lot. And I think that's what our constituents want. So I would hope that maybe you'd reconsider and try to work with us to come up with some solutions, because I just don't see it as a kind of a partisan thing. So I'd like to hopefully have some cooperation and see if we can get something done for our constituents.
Okay, is there any further discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail. We are now at the, I believe, a final amendment that is before us. It's an A2 amendment, and I believe Representative West is going to be offering that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A2 amendment, which we've already briefly discussed because it's in the DE2. It makes so a person of 18 years of age who has failed their test has to receive 3 hours of behind-the-wheel training. And you mentioned there's an added cost to the person. But I think $150 is certainly worth having people be safe drivers. And right now, as the director Corey mentioned, people are retaking this test 6 to 8 times, which is the reason we're here, one of the reasons why nobody can get testing. So this would help alleviate the problem. It wouldn't cost the state any money. It would make our roads safer. So I'd ask for your support on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative West. Is there a discussion to the A2? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm hoping that this may be one of those amendments maybe we can get behind. And so, Representative Bernardi, I share with you the frustration of the inefficiencies and some of the issues in regards to the departments and the agencies and trying to work with. And I've worked with you on other areas as well. One of the things that I think we need to understand is I learned early on in my life why I failed tests. So one day in high school, I failed a test. I went to the teacher and I said, how come I failed this test? And she said to me, well, because you didn't get enough answers right. Okay, that's it. Right now, we're talking about people that have not been able to demonstrate the skills necessary to stay drive safely to impact all of us out on the streets. And Mr. Chair, you and I have worked on unattentive drivers. And other things that we want to have people driving safe. It's not just the fact that we want a person in the car to be safe, but all of the others that are coming towards them that are driving other cars are also safe. That means we need to demonstrate a certain level of experience and skill in regards to that. Now, if you have been unable to afford or get free driver's training and you come and take a test and you fail and you do nothing else, except come back again, you really haven't taken time and had any opportunity for you to become better at the skill level that we all expect. This would at least require that. Now, this doesn't talk about pricing or whatever. It doesn't say that we can't provide some free training elsewhere for those of low income. Basically, it says, though, if you're going to take the test again, at least you need to do something different than that. And I think that's all that we should be able to expect of each other, is if you want to keep taking a test, let's not just hope that you finally coincidentally get it right. We want you to be safe. We want us to be safe. And so I think this is one of the amendments that I hope that we can all support. So thank you.
Discussion to the West Amendment. Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to read a little bit of an email or paraphrase a little bit, but driving schools train students on safe driving concepts and the technical driving skills that are expected to pass the road test. Training them correctly so that they can pass the first time reduces the strain on the system. And so that's the main problem that we identified. But secondly, I think we should all agree that we want people on the roads driving that are safe. Make it safer for everybody. And so I would think you would want to be able to support the West Amendment and work to solve this problem.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Is there any further discussion to the HR? Representative Bernardi, do you have some advice for the
I just encourage members to vote no. I believe in second chances. And I was able to learn to parallel park and not go for perfection. And I don't think that would have taken $150 to get three hours more of training. So that's just one example. But I this is a burden on test takers, and I would encourage members to vote no.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. Seeing no further discussion to the A2 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Thank you, members. So we have now, we have the bill as amended before us. House File 4097, closing comments, Representative Bernardi?
Well, thank you for this opportunity to have this extensive hearing today, Mr. Chair, and for the thoughtful discussion, and I encourage members to support my bill. Thank you.
That was not a closing comment because we have a couple of others for first. Representative Runbeck, Representative Petersburg, Representative Kosnick. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to get perhaps council could tell us the driver services operating account. Who manages that account? I mean, does statute specify how money is spent that is in that account? The $600,000 that's coming in for fines, do we know what will happen with that money?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, the driver services account is an account within the special revenue fund. The revenues from it are generated from fees. This would be one of those fees that additional revenue into the driver services account. That account can only be spent as appropriated by the legislature. There's not statutory authority for the agency to spend the money absent an appropriation, a direct appropriation from the legislature.
So, Mr. Chair, so then at this point it will simply go to the account to be determined later how it will be spent. Is that correct?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, that's correct. It would add to the balance of the account.
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I would like to get a roll call on this bill, if
okay.
we could.
Roll call on the final bill as amended.
And Mr. Chair, if I could ask Chair Bernardi. So I noticed just recently today, I've checked, too, and it doesn't appear that this has a companion bill in the Senate, and since we're sending Ways and Means, it most likely is intended to go on its own. Do we have any idea of what's going to happen? We're already close to deadlines now and pushing forward. So do you have kind of an intent on what direction you see this bill going?
Yes, we do. We're momentarily getting a Senate author. It's in the works, and it should be hopefully submitted momentarily or shortly.
Thank you,
Representative Petersburg.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative, so you're anticipating it'll stay on its own track in the Senate as well?
Representative Bernardi.
I am not. I do not know how leadership is handling it over there.
Thank you,
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, and kind of disappointed we couldn't get a couple of our ideas brought forward with good intention. To try to solve the problem that was identified and be responsive to our constituents. I think studying the issue to the problem, the study is kind of is drawing to preconceived notions or issues that we already know about. And so I think we're wasting $24,000 just to do that when we already have some solutions here that would effectively reduce the wait times and increase driver safety for those new drivers and those current drivers that are on the road to have better drivers. And so I'm encouraged by Director Corey's comments in a previous hearing that were a little bit more amicable to third-party testing as part of the solution to alleviate the long, long four-month-out scheduling problems. My neighbor two doors away has a kid. He's going to be 15. No, he's going to be 14, and she's trying to schedule out, and she's like 4 months out to get his test done, and it won't be on his 16th birthday. And so there is a real problem here that we're missing the opportunity to fix. And so with Dr. Corey's encouragement, or Director Corey, that you know, there's some comments that she made that we can work close to doing this, and we can figure out a bill and work together and address those concerns that she has. Work with the Senate has a bill that's moving. They want to work on this. Seems like the House Democrats want to study an issue rather than provide solutions. Wasn't willing to take up practical steps to improve that situation. And I think that ultimately we're trying to put safer drivers on the road, and we put solutions to do that and also alleviate the wait times. And studying the issue further simply isn't going to do anything for those parents that are having to take off work. It's not going to do anything for those students that are failing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. You're charging them more fees to do that, and I think it's appropriate because there's a cost to reserving that time. So I don't really have a problem with that. But you're thinking our solutions are too expensive or are disproportionate or something. You don't get anything for free, and I think people will pay. They can still use the current state system, or they can use a third-party system, whatever they prefer. But it's a privilege to drive on our roads, and it doesn't come for free. And so I'm disappointed that we weren't able to take any of these ideas that we had and that we shared. So I would encourage a no vote on this bill as it's been amended.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank Representative Bernardi for bringing this bill, because sometimes studies do help us get to a deeper root of the problem, and I'm glad that Representative Kosnick mentioned privilege. My neighbors are waiting until they're 18 to take the test because they don't have the privilege of paying for driver's exams and testing. So, you know, I think a study is a good place to start to see how we can right-size our testing exam system, and don't want to jump out ahead of figuring out what the real root of the problem is. Thank you.
Okay, is there any further discussion then? Now you might have some more comments in addition now that you've heard from other members or not.
No, or not, but thank you for again for the time today.
I appreciate your thoughtful approach to this issue, and look forward to additional discussion as this bill moves forward. Members, a roll call has been requested. Mr. Dodge will take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Yes.
Vice Chair Tabke?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson? Representative Bernardi?
Yes.
Representative Elkins?
Yes.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Heinrich? Representative Cagle? Yes. Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Mason?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Petersburg?
No.
Representative Richardson?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative West?
No.
Representative Walgamott? Representative Joaquim?
Yes.
There being 10 ayes and 5 nays, the motion to move House File 4097 as amended to Ways and Means is approved. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Bernardi. Thank you, members. Actually, I do want to really appreciate the thoughtful discussion we had about this. And, you know, I imagine there'll be a lot more conversation as this moves ahead, and look forward to that as well. So thank you.
All right, members, now we have House File 3252. Chair Hornstein's bill is up. This is the campus zone pass bill that we discussed last week or earlier this week. Last week. Chair Hornstein, would you like to move your bill, please, to higher ed?
Yes, that was our original motion. I have an amendment. I did want to just let folks know Mr. Parmaker, who testified before, was interested in testifying again today. He's not feeling well, and I told him not to come. I don't think he has symptoms that would be of concern. However, I think it's a general rule right now, and I just wanted to say as chair that no one should show up anywhere not feeling well. And so I will try to represent Mr. Parmaker's perspective as best I can. And members, as you'll recall, we heard this bill. We heard from the students at the U of M. We heard some concerns from the Met Council. I had said at that time that I think there needed to be a revision to the fiscal note. I didn't want to take a vote at that time because I wanted proper vetting of that fiscal note and you know, making sure that it was posted and the public and members would have an opportunity to look at that. I will have Mr. Lee explain what the difference is between the fiscal note that you saw a week ago and what's before us today.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, in your packets, there is a fiscal note for House File 3552. There's two sections of it. The first section is for the Metropolitan Council, and that shows about $153,000 a year cost to the council for implementing the change in the zone pass. The details of the cost are shown on the bottom of page 5. And so there's a bit of a difference in the current structure of the agreement between the Metropolitan Council and the University of Minnesota for the zone pass. And what the legislation would do is change would change that slightly so some more of the cost would be borne by the Metropolitan Council. Then the second part of the fiscal note, and this is the part that the A1 amendment would change, if you go to the page 9, partway down the page, you'll see the total cost is $51,624. The amendment would insert an appropriation on page 2, line 5, of $64,000. That is the cost of the food availability study. So what the fiscal or what the amendment would do would change is it would decrease the cost of to the University of Minnesota because it's the legislature appropriating the money for the study from the general fund, and so the fiscal note would show savings to the University of Minnesota in relation to the original agreement with the Metropolitan Council that the this bill would modify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Any questions on the fiscal side?
Members, you can see why I had Mr. Lee
yes.
explain that.
Representative Kosnick.
One second here. So, Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Lee, so this amendment has the Met Council eat like $13,500 in management costs for the UPass that the University of Minnesota used to pay for, is that correct?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kosnick, Ms. Burris pointed out something I need to correct myself. The amendment language on line 1.2 also modifies the agreement with the Metropolitan Council and University, so that would change the cost allocation and so that the estimated loss in the UPass cost to the Metropolitan Council would be about $70,000 a year rather than $150,000.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I know we have talked a lot about the Met Council and with their budgets and presumed deficits, and I wonder if the Met Council has some comments on, I guess I thought it was $13,500, but now it's $70,000 a year. if we get some direction from the Met Council on how this affects their operations.
Mr. Chair and all members, just so you know, we are adjourning this meeting in 4 minutes. We've already had extensive amount of discussion on it, and I appreciate that this is a different thing, and we're going to discuss it.
And Mr. Chair, I think it is important, and
absolutely.
Representative Koznick does raise an important question that I think we want some clarity on. Part of the reason to do this is this actually reduces the cost to the Met Council from the original bill that we heard. So I want to be responsive to what I heard last time. And so I just wanted, it was a little confusing, and I just wanted to clarify that piece. But we have Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Judd Shetland, Government Affairs Director for the Met Council. And I appreciate the explanation related to the fiscal note. However, it still doesn't get to the point where we are treating one group, a university college, different than others and setting a precedent that we do not support. It is also, again, we have many universities and colleges that work on our transit or that are housed along our transit lines, like the A line, where we have Hamline University, McAllister, St. Thomas, very close. We are not proposing to offset some of their costs for their college passes that we have. We have, again, over 30 of them throughout the entire system. So I appreciate what the university students are interested in doing. However, we would suggest that we move forward with the universal pass at the steep reduction that we talked about last week, and we do not support the bill even with the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. Mr. Chair.
When I do this, that's my impersonation of Bernie Sanders at a debate. Anyway, when he really wants to make a point. So I appreciate what Mr. Shetland said, but I want to emphasize again a point that was made. Now he's doing a Bernie Sanders impression. I want to emphasize a point I made last week, which is this is an apples and oranges comparison. We are talking about one campus, one line, one stop, potentially two of a light rail line. We're not talking about, as you know, having it. There's no McAllister College Zone Pass that goes from Snelling and Grand up to, you know, Snelling and Selby. You know, there's no bus number 21 zone pass that goes from one block and then the St. Thomas campus. You know, there's no, you know, zone pass for, you know, a bunch of other buses or BRT lines. And you know, there's nothing of the sort in other campuses. So I appreciate this idea that the Met Council has put forward to reduce that college pass. But we're talking about something completely different. It is an apples and oranges situation.
Representative Petersburg, and then we'll vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair. What is your anticipated mechanics of where this going? Is going to higher ed next? Are you anticipating staying in the omnibus bill or coming out to the floor separately? Do you have any preference?
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you. Another great question, Representative Petersburg. This is going to higher ed. If this moves on, this is a transportation expense. So if we have a supplemental budget,
come back.
This would be a transportation committee. It would be from our, you know, target. So, and we're still, you know, I think leadership and others are still, we're still in the process of discussing whether we'll have comprehensive bills or not. So this bill is moving on its own at this point. But to your point, it would be from our budget.
So, and would it come back here?
Representative Petersburg.
I'm sorry. Well, are you?
Well, if we have a comprehensive bill, it would come back here. Right. If not, it moves on its own.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So, Chair Hornstein moves the A1 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails.
That passed 1-0.
I think
votes.
All right, now we have before us 3252 as amended. Mr. Chair, any thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, we had a good discussion last time. I think this fiscal note improves the bill for the transit agency, the Met Council, and I ask for your support.
Thank you very much. Representative Mason.
One question with your explanation of apples and oranges.
I'm thinking you're going to have to be available to a lot of institutions if this passes.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, I stand by my contention. I don't think that these other institutions are not nearly as large as the U. They don't. There's no zone within McAllister College. There's one stop on the A line. There's no zone for St. Thomas. There's one or two stops on the 21 bus. So this is really a very unique situation to the U, and I don't think we're going to have a bunch of colleges beating down the door to have their own zone passes, but who knows?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So would you like to renew your motion that House File 3252 as amended be referred to the Higher Ed, Finance, and Policy Division?
I do, and thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you very much, everyone.
So appreciative that you didn't ask for a division.
any final, Mr. Chair, any final thoughts before we adjourn?
No, thank you, members. We have we'll be hearing Representative Richardson's bill, I believe, on Tuesday, along with some other bills, and encourage folks to, stay safe here over the weekend, and we'll be seeing you on the floor.
Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.